At least it was with the right people. My people. February 7. Family violence class. Mario's on everyone's case again. "Does this sound familiar?" he says. "When your girlfriend's been out, do you check her odometer to see how far she went?" "Don't everyone?" Kelly says. "How else you know if she's telling the truth?" Tiny asks. I'll take that as a yes for Tiny and Kelly. Thanks for your candor. Mario scans the room. Anyone else? Or do you interrogate her about where she's been, listen to her answering machine, call her names, or isolate her from her friends? No, 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 I shake my head. None of this applies to me. Or does it? I study the water beads pooling under the AC unit and remember about Elsa. What if you don't like her friends? Tiny asks. I don't know, Tiny, Mario says. What if you don't like her friends? Then she ought not to hang out with them. When Mario doesn't answer, Tiny continues, cracking his enormous knuckles. I mean, I don't want Danielle going around with people got a bad attitude toward me or our relationship. Her girlfriends all talk trash about a guy, acting like she's all that and could do so much better, he says, and I nod. And you don't like that, Mario says. Would you? And what you say goes? Mario pretends he's confused. Danielle has no say, she can't make her own decisions? That ain't what I said. Repeat what you said, then. I misunderstood. Forget it, Tiny flops back in his seat. I knew what you meant, I mutter. Mario hears, and I think he's about to challenge me, but this guy named Ray raises his hand. Ray's one of the older guys in class. At least he's through school. He's sort of serious compared to the rest, which is probably why I figured him for a kiss-ass from day one. I understand, he says when Mario calls on him. What do you understand, Ray? You're saying it's controlling behavior to separate her from her friends. We shouldn't do that. Gold star for Ray. That's what I'm saying, Mario says, like he knows Ray's a bootlicker, too. He turns to me. I saw you me-tooing before, Nick. Let's get your input. Don't call on him, Kelly interrupts. Richie Rich is too big to talk to the likes of us. Everyone looks at me then, so I'm concerned. I hit Kelly with a look, but I decide he's not worth bothering with. Instead, I say, I agree with Tiny. I mean, should I spend time with people I don't like just because they're her friends? Not necessarily, Mario says, but can she? We were always together, I say. Maybe that was part of the problem. I shrug again, and Mario says, what about your guy friends? I'll bet they hang out with people you may not like. Do you say, hey, Bubba, it's him or me, or do you just go along? I go along, I think, remembering Tom's friendship with St. O'Connor. I'd spent hours, days of my life with that knuckle-dragger. I say, that's different. How so? Because if I told a guy to choose between me and someone else, he'd tell me to screw off. Because you have no power over a guy, no control the way you have with a girlfriend. No, because if you say that to a guy, he'd think you're queer, I say. And if you say it to a girl, she'll know you're a control freak. I look around the room. Everyone's pretending fascination with what Mario's saying because they don't want to talk themselves. Was I a control freak? If I hadn't done stuff like that, would Caitlin still be around? But I go for broke. So I'll find someone else, I say. They all have the same thing between their legs. This gets some chuckles, some raised thumbs, but Mario shakes his head. Somewhere down the road, Nick, I hope you'll find they don't all have the same thing between their ears. The good ones don't put up with macho mind games. I'm coming up with a response when a voice interrupts. Why don't you leave him alone? It's Leo the Cool. I gape at him, and Mario says, what? You said no put-downs, didn't you? Leo says. That was one of your rules. Confronting someone about their beliefs isn't a put-down, Mario says. Challenging attitudes is the point of this class. That's a load of crap, Leo says. All you do here is play mind games and make people feel stupid. I've recovered from my shock enough to scowl at Leo. I don't need you to defend me. Even so, I'm wondering why he did. Sorry, he says. Thought you did, considering you got this look like an ant staring down a can of black flag. You aren't my mother, I say. But that gets me mad. Why is he calling attention to me when I just want to be ignored? Why is he making me out like I'm some weakling? I feel blood coursing through my wrists, and I stand. I start toward Leo, but Mario gets between us real quick. Are we still in my class? His eyes are cold. I know we aren't, because there's no fighting in here. But he... Not here. You take it to the streets if you have to, but not in my class. He turns to Leo. Hear that? Leo doesn't look at me. No biggie. I was just trying to help. Mario turns my way. Nick? I don't need his help, I say. I've eaten as much shit as anyone here. He's got no right to act like I can't. Mario nods. I agree with you, but fighting's not what this class is about. I don't know what the hell it's about, I say. It's about God kicking you in the butt so you'll notice the mess you've made. When I look at him, surprised, Mario adds, Now sit. He waits until I obey, then stares at me until I look away. He turns. Next session, we'll talk about eating shit. By that I mean we'll be discussing our families, our parents. He pauses like he knows the reaction he'll get. Stunned silence. Everyone who's been shuffling around, getting ready to go, stops. He really wants us to talk about our parents? Like, about my father? Tiny says, What's that got to do with anything? I know it'll be painful for some of you, maybe all of us. Mario walks around the circle, scanning our eyes. But exploring the past brings out the sort of feelings that cause us to become insecure, controlling, even violent. When Mario passes me, I don't look at him. He sits, hands on knees. Anyone have anything else before we call it quits? People start gathering books, keys, backpacks. Kelly's recovered enough to volunteer. I heard a wicked-ass joke. Always got time for humor. Clean humor, Mario says. It's clean. Kelly flips a hand across his hair. What's the first thing a gal does when she checks out of the battered women's shelter? Mario holds up his hand. I don't think... The dishes, if she knows what's good for her. People laugh, but me, I'm wondering what made Leo take my side. And what will I say about my father in class? Later that day. I'm still thinking about my father hours later, instead of doing homework, instead of working on my journal. Fact is, my father is part of this story too, the next part. But I don't want to write about him, and I sure as hell don't want to tell Mario about him. Judge Lehman said she wouldn't read the journal if I didn't want her to, but how can I be sure? Finally, I open the wavy-edged book to a fresh page and write, Don't read. You said you wouldn't. Lights blazed on and I saw the clock, 3 a.m. I blinked, tried to cover my face with the sheet, but my father pulled it away. What is this? He yelled, shoving a paper in my face. I said, I didn't know. I stood, then edged away, trying to focus, but he came closer, screaming. I will tell you what. A receipt for beer. Beer! Rosa brought beer into this house, so where is it? The beer for Zach's party. I said, I don't know. Honest, Dad. Liar! I asked Rosa. She says you took it. She's lying, Dad. Thief! I did not raise you a thief, but you are one. When I was your age, I was away from home working. You only steal from me. I didn't. He hit me hard in the face, and I stumbled back onto my bed. I lay not moving, not speaking. Arguing made his anger worse, and now I only wanted him to leave. He raged on about how hard he worked, what a lazy ingrate I was, but I stopped listening, my brain carrying me to an alternative reality where I was watching someone else lying under my black bay window. Then I went further. I don't know if it was a minute or an hour. I stopped caring whether Rosa heard. I don't even know if he hit me again. My mind took me to Caitlin. Finally, he left. My cheek throbbed, and I knew I should go downstairs and ice it. Instead, I rolled over and fell asleep to the sound of his footsteps in the hall. February 9. Parking lot at 7-Eleven. Monday morning, an hour before school, I hold the phone at 7-Eleven, truck exhaust belching in my face, watching a terrier trying to mount a shepherd mix behind the ice machine. Should I call? It's juvenile, I know, calling, then hanging up, but I haven't heard Caitlin's voice in days, only every song on the radio crying her name, and finally I dig in my pocket for change. Her number is comfortable under my fingers, a no-brainer. Then, her voice. Hello? I twist the receiver above my head and take a sip of my big gulp Mountain Dew. Hello? Is anyone there? A group from school pulls in. I've seen them before, but I doubt they know my name. My friends don't hang at 7-Eleven. Hello? Hello? The line goes dead, and I walk to school. Caitlin's voice still in my head. That day, lunch hour. I'm actually reduced to eating in the cafeteria. And alone. I try to separate mac and cheese with a spork, unable to eat, though I was hungry a minute before. I think of Caitlin. The way she sounded this morning. Hearing Caitlin's voice always helped. The journal. Don't read. Friday morning, I stared into the bathroom mirror. My face was roadkill. I brushed my teeth, wincing at the tenderness inside my mouth, the puffy redness of my cheek. I should have iced it. I went to my father's room and stood in the doorway, waiting for him to glance up from what he was doing. When he finally did, I told him he needed to call the school. Somehow, I said, I didn't feel well enough to go. He just nodded. I told him to say I had the flu this time. He started to say something, but I walked away. Now was the only time I could get away with that. Did he ever feel bad? Never bad enough not to do it again. I went back to bed and lay there half an hour, 45 minutes, staring at the ceiling. When I heard the garage door rumble up and down, I paged Caitlin. Then I waited. She didn't call back. After 5 minutes, I paged her again, 911 this time. Still, no answer. Where was she? Maybe she'd never call back and I'd just drop off the face of the earth. I drifted back to sleep when the telephone finally rang. Where were you? I answered it. It was 10 minutes, Nick. I was in class. I heard voices in the background and looked at my watch. She'd waited until passing time to call. Bitch. I was worried when you didn't show up this morning, she said. I apologized for not chauffeuring her to school. I'm sick, if you care, I said. I knew I sounded pathetic, but I wanted her to be miserable like me, and she didn't sound miserable enough. She said of course she cared. She'd come over later. I told her no, because, of course, she couldn't see my face. I want to. I don't care if I catch anything. No, I said no. Fine, Nick, be that way. Now she sounded miserable, but not for the right reason, because I'd yelled at her, not because she missed me. You won't go to the game tonight without me, I asked. She didn't answer right away, and I told her never mind, sucking my lip. Go right ahead. It's just everyone will expect me. Go ahead. Have fun with everyone. I won't go, okay? Go! I said I wouldn't. Go, you bitch! The background noise had stopped, and I heard Caitlin gulping back tears. Finally, she said, Don't be mad. I know I sounded selfish, but I thought maybe you'd feel better by tonight. I don't want to go without you. I didn't answer a second. I was a worm. Because I'd been mean to her, because of my face and my father's hands. Because I was a worm. I'm not mad at you, I said, thinking, I need you. But I can't go tonight if I don't want to suit up. Oh, call me again at lunch. I struggled not to add, please. Kat called at lunch and after school, begging to come over both times. I wanted her to come. God, did I want her to, but I couldn't let her. Instead, I told her to page me when she got home. That night she called during the game. When I asked if she missed it, she said, I miss you. I didn't believe her, but I fell asleep with the phone in my hand. February 12. Hallway by Mr. Christie's classroom. Hello. Caitlin whirls to face me. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't trying to run into Caitlin. Since I figured out her new class schedule, I've been bugging out a third period history hoping to see her. After 2 weeks, it finally works. Nick, you're supposed to leave me alone, she starts to jog toward class. You going to have me arrested for talking to you in the hall? I move closer and she stops. She carries a wooden hall pass and wears a pink dress, revealing a veil of freckles from days she forgot sunscreen. No, she says. I forgot my books is all. I rein in the arm that's reaching for her and force my eyes to the floor. I know you didn't plan it, she says, her voice uncertain. She thinks of something else. Did you call Monday? I've been getting hang-ups. What are you saying? I just thought Caitlin, you hauled me into court. You had some judge order me not to call you. Chuckling at the absurdity of it. She hasn't left. I move two steps closer, the smell of her finesse shampoo calling up stupid memories of watching reruns together after school. Throw the order away, Kat. I have to go. She doesn't move. I'm going to counseling every week. I've changed. I make the big gamble. You feel the same way you always did, don't you? Her face tells me that's true. The hall is dead silent. The big wall clock ticks 9, 20 minutes until the end of class. Her eyes meet mine, and I think I see her hand move toward me. I reach for her. She flinches. Don't, Nick.
Don't what? Who's talking to you?
No one.
Is it Elsa? Saint?
They don't know me, Kat.
I slide my hand onto her waist, leaning close. She doesn't pull away.
Only you know me. You know how I get stressed out, the way things are at home. I never told anyone else, just you. You were the only one who understood.
I know. I can feel her breath on my face, blood coursing under my hand, the feel and smell of her sending my own blood rushing to all the same nerve endings. We stare at each other, and I see her giving in to the feelings. Then she turns away, saying,
I can't take this.
She hurries toward her class. I watch her go. Before she reaches the door, I say, I never loved you, you know. She stops a second in the silent hallway. She lifts her chin and stares at me a long time. Finally, she says,
Thanks, Nick.
She shakes her head. Thanks for reminding me why I can't be with you. She slips into her classroom. I start to walk the other way. Something on the floor catches my eye. Caitlin's pen, dropped in her hurry to escape me. I recognize it from the way she bit the cap. I used to hate that, but now I pick the pen up and place it in my mouth, caressing her teeth marks with the tip of my tongue. Later that day, I still have Caitlin's pen when I pick up my journal at night. I have absolutely done my word count for this week, but now I just want to think about her, remember what it was like to be with her. The journal. You're still not reading this, right? 24 hours into my paternally imposed exile, the doorbell rang. No way could I answer it. My father, either asleep or gone fishing, didn't stir. Rosa's sneakers squeaked on marble below. I heard her tell whoever it was I wasn't home. The next voice was Caitlin's. She answered in halting Spanish. She was making a B, but only because I did her homework.
El está aquí. El automóvil está aquí.
She'd seen my car. She must have pushed past Rosa because I heard heels on the stairs, her voice calling my name. I reached for the door, then pulled back. I couldn't let her in. I told you not to come, I said. Caitlin pounded the door and begged to know why I was acting that way. She rattled the knob, yelling so loud I thought she'd wake my father. Having Caitlin see him, awakened, would be worse than bruises. Out of choices, I cracked the door. Caitlin pushed it the rest of the way open. It slid over carpet with a hiss. I couldn't stop her. She started to form her first word, stopped, lips parted, and stared. I said, I got creamed in practice Thursday. It's no big deal. She nodded, almost accepting this, but then she said, We studied together Thursday night. It wasn't like this. I told her it swelled more later, but she knew I was lying.
Someone beat you up.
Not likely. She stared, and I saw her putting it all together. My absence from school, the fact that I hadn't seen anyone since Thursday, and she took my face in her hand.
Oh, God. Was it your dad?
I said no, tried to pull away, but she touched my face, moving her hand to the other side. Her fingers were cool, soft, smoothing my hair, and I remember what she told me at Zach's party, about her mother saying she was fat. Could she understand about my father? Finally, I said, He didn't beat me up. We had an argument. He was drinking.
And he beat you up. There's no other word for this, Nick.
He hit me, okay? Once. I can handle it.
He must have hit you pretty hard to...
I can handle it. She didn't answer. Downstairs, Rosa started the vacuum. Finally, I said, No one else knows. Not Tom, not anyone.
You should tell someone.
I'm telling you.
But, I mean, a teacher or something.
Tell him what? I'm 16 years old and my dad still hits me? It infuriated me to have to whisper. I know what they'd say. Butch up, kid. Well, that's what I'm doing. I'd been wrong to tell her. She couldn't understand. But to my surprise, she embraced me, her face sinking down my chest. And nothing hurt. I love you, Caitlin. The words escaped before I could stop them. Too late to take back or pretend I was joking. I waited for her to recoil, or maybe she'd say she'd loved me too. Could she? Please say it, Kat. Please. I love you too, she said. February 14. Last place I want to be on Valentine's Day. Kelly examines his boot and throws out the challenge.